Talk 105.9, the best of Roy Basnett.
Hello and welcome to this week's podcast from The Roy Basnett Show. Each week we will be bringing you some classic moments from our award-winning programme on City Talk 105.9, The Voice of Liverpool. Don't forget, if you want to hear the show live along with the latest guests and discussions, you can join me weekdays between 2 and 6am on City Talk across the North West and North Wales on 105.9 FM or DAB Digital Radio, or you can listen live online at citytalk.fm. To start off with this week, we catch up with one of Britain's most loved comedians, best remembered for entertaining us on ITV on a Sunday afternoon with Bullseye. I am, of course, talking about Mr. Jim Bowen.
City Talk 105.9, the best of Roy Basnett.
The best thing in the world is if somebody can make you laugh. That is a gift, and the person who possesses that gift joins me in the studio at the moment. I refer, of course, to Mr. Jim Bowen. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, sir. That's very kind of me. Thank you very much.
By your own admission, it certainly is the title of your biography as well. Right time, right place. If ever there was somebody that applied to, it was you. From your very birth, as it were, as well. Well, Jim.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. The title of the book was no accident. But actually, I'm almost a Scouser. I'm the wrong side of the river. I was born in Heswall in Cheshire.
All right.
To a lady called Miss Williams. Now, she wasn't married, which made me one of those. And in 1937, it wasn't all that clever, really, that. I discovered that my mother was called Miss Williams, and apparently she was a good sport. Rumour has it that my father was the crew of the Ark Royal, right. But we won't go into that. Yeah, that's 70 years ago now.
Yeah?
Oh. Yeah, and then I was into Church of England Children's Home in Liverpool. I was there till I was 9 months old, and then I was adopted by a Joe and Annie Whittaker, who lived in Accrington.
Yeah.
That's talk about right place, right time. I was the one to be picked out. Yeah, the rest of them in there, they were living in these homes until they were 13, 14, 15, if they weren't picked out. And then they were just, in 1938, in the 30s, they were just sent out into the world. So that's how lucky I was. Yeah, I was 9 months, just over 9 months old when I was adopted.
Right.
Talk about luck, eh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Blimey.
So obviously, that was the start of your good fortune.
It was, and it's been, to be honest, Roy, it's been, touch wood, nothing but all the way along since. I've been incredibly fortunate in the life I had, the parents I had, ultimately the wife I got and the kids we got, apart from a little wobble with our Pete for about a year. But yeah. It's been wonderful. We've had a marvellous time.
So obviously the chosen career for you, reading your book, was that you were going to be a teacher.
Well, yeah, originally, because I took my GCSEs in 1953, I think, and I took 8 and failed 9. I mean, made an absolute bodge of it. Went to empty dustbins for a few years. About a year and a half, I think I did. And then I went back to school again, 2 years on. And he put me back, did the head, he put me back in the same class. So I was 17 and I was back in a class of 15-year-olds to do my GCSEs again. He gave me another chance to get at them. And then I did the GCSEs and I was okay then. I got my head down and worked, saw sense. Fortunately, just in time. And then I went in the army, did my national service. Fought for my country in Shrewsbury, and then went on to Chester College, which was quite ironic, really, quite close to the place I was born.
Yeah,
and qualified as a school teacher. Did that till 69, and I was a deputy head then. And then I was doing stand up, trying to get around the working men's clubs as we could do in the 60s, because there were millions of them. We could go out and we used to stand up. I used to go out and just ask the concert set, "Can I do 10 minutes?" Not for any money, you know, just to get the hang of it. I went to see Doddy in 65 at the Opera House in Blackpool, and I was still school teaching, and I watched him just destroy 3,500 people for 2 hours. Mm. And I thought, this is for me. I'd like to do this. I've never, ever got to that pitch, but I've tried hard. So Ken was really responsible for me going into the business.
Your influence.
Because when you do get it right, the thing about you know the game, Roy, you know your comedy as well as all of us. There's no grey area in comedy. You're either winning and tearing them to pieces, and the sensation, it's instant gratification. There's no greater feeling in the world, is there?
Oh, no.
Than being or watching a comic on full flow going really well. And then the obverse side of that is when you, as they say, pardon the expression, but it's early morning, when you die on your arse. I mean, and that's an horrendous. There's no middle ground. It's either feast or famine in terms of emotion. That's for sure.
Yeah, Yeah. I see. So obviously the influence there, that was what you want. So where did the step up come then, Jim? How did you get your way in?
Well, it was funny. I was doing a place in Blackpool called the Dolphin Bar. Well, it was Cleveley's, actually, and a guy called... Oh, God, what's his name? A bald-headed fella. He was the compere there, an Irishman, no teeth. He said, now, come on, ladies, how many points are you doing? Jim Bowen. I thought, oh, I'm on. One of them. Brian Rossi.
Right.
Now, how's this for right place, right time? I did six nights there, two spots a night, for the whole week, Monday through to Saturday. And I died every night, apart from Wednesday. On the Wednesday night, I went on, having died three consecutive nights. It was Thursday, sorry. I'd died three nights on the trot, and I was losing the will to live. And I went on the Thursday night, and for some reason, I tore them to pieces. I've no idea. I can't. Don't tell me why. Same type of audience, same act. Well, it was certainly the same act. And that particular night, Frank Carson was in.
Right.
When I came off, I went to the bar, because it was the only night I dared go out. Into the front of house. I've been that bad. And Carson said, you're a very funny man. He said, how do you like to go on television? And of course, it was just before the comedian started. So Frank dropped my name into Johnny Hamp. And 18 months later, Johnny Hamp rang me and said, do you want to come and try? And the comedians then, in 1970, was massive.
Yeah.
Absolutely massive. So luckily, I got it right for Hampy, who became godfather to our Pete. And well, the rest of it's, as they say...
Right.
You know.
It was a tremendously successful format, a complete primetime show.
Well, you've talked to most of them, I think, in your time.
I have, I've had the privilege of speaking to many of the people who were on there, and obviously, sadly, some of them no longer with us.
Well, the worrying thing is most of them now, it's not some of them, it's most of them.
Yeah.
But we lost Bernard and Reedy, we lost Mike Reed.
Yeah.
And they've all sort of whittled away. Did you hear the story? I don't know whether you heard the story about when Frank went to see Bernard... In hospital.
Just before he died?
Yeah.
I know, I've heard something of it. Could tell us, please.
Do you want to do it? Well, I went to the funeral, and I briefly spoke at the funeral.
Yeah,
and I've done a TV thing about him. All the PC Brigade and the Right On lot, the Save the Ferret in Mansfield, were all there having all this, you know, do-gooders and vegetarians and all them. Yeah. Friends of the Earth and Carbon Footprint and all this business.
Yeah.
A carbon footprint, when you walk into the house with the mud on your shoe, it's nothing to do with global warming. It's all anyway, forget that. I feel better now I've said that. Bernard's funeral was one of the happiest days. Now, this sounds very irreverent, but I don't mean it to. It was one of the happiest, funniest days of my life.
Know, Jim, I was there.
Oh, you were there?
I was there. It was a very... I wouldn't have missed it for the world.
When Carson took over, didn't he?
Yeah.
the priest there who was doing it, because Bernard was a good Catholic, he really was, and because the Catholic minister tried to start it and Carson took over, he said, welcome to the day now, he said, and thank you, Father, welcome to our country. Do you remember that bit? And he said, I went to see Bernard about 3 weeks ago, he said, I said, how are you doing, Bernard? And Bernard said, the nurses in here, they're a pain. He said, they're a nuisance, he said. Absolute nuisance. He said, every night they're giving me iron tablets, he said. I wake up in the morning, every morning I'm facing north. And he was doing all this stuff at the funeral. And do you remember Vince Miller was there, sang a bit with me?
Yeah, he sang, yeah.
And he sang it, he did sing it, he got it bob on, he sang it just nicely. Frank said, thank you very much, Vince, now we know you've no work. No, he said, now we know why you've no work.
Yeah.
It was a joyous day.
Do you know, the thing was, and what I noticed about that, Carson, I was in stitches watching Carson like that, but at the end of it got a bit too much for him because he was almost crying money.
I think, honestly, Roy, I think his speech, his eulogy, was absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah.
For going from the ridiculous, you know, to doing this wonderful, it was so lucid, he knew exactly what he was saying. And it was doing him in at the end, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Anyway, slightly digressing there. Let's get back to you in your life then, Jim.
We're not
quite finished with the story just yet. Obviously, the comedians are hugely successful. Went on to produce a career for many a comedian
he
on
did,
there.
Indeed.
Yourself included. Pick up the story from there.
Came in on more or less on the second wave. The first wave, there was Mike Burton, lovely George Roper.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, a wonderful, wonderful
Very
comedian.
Funny man.
What a man, what a gent. Mike Reed, Bernard Manning, Colin Crompton, Dougie Brown with the parrot. Who is it? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. And he made stars of Charlie Williams, of course. I mean, lovely Charlie. I mean, how he'd survive today with the PC Brigade, I don't know. He came on at about 3 years ago, we signed to do 16, No, 12 Sunday concerts at the Opera House. And it was the comedians. And there was Roy Walker, Dougie Brown, me, Vince Earl, I think, did it? Who was in...
Brookside, was, yeah.
Absolutely.
Ron Dixon.
You got him, yeah. Mm. Well, anyway, there were about 8 of us. And Charlie came, Charlie Williams, and he wasn't well. He got a bit of Parkinson's. And, and he was getting a little bit of Alzheimer's. And Johnny Hamp brought him. And he said, whoever's on stage, he said, if the spotlight flashes, just stop what you're doing and finish the gag you're doing and just introduce Charlie. Because he couldn't do an act. I mean, he used to get little windows in his life of maybe 10 minutes where everything had come together. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he brought him there, and I was on. And I was privileged to be on. I felt really lucky to be on because the light flashed when I was on. So I finished the gag, whatever it was I was doing. I said, ladies and gentlemen, you might want to see this guy. Just want to have a word with you. And Dougie Brown brought him on.
Mm.
And the place went crazy.
Yeah.
And he just stood there and he said, remember, this is PC Brigade now. He said, hey, the rate, old love, the rate. He says, I'm not feeling so good. He said, but I've got a witch doctor to look after me. I'm doing all right.
I remember that. Yeah.
Oh, it was unbelievable. And it just blows the sea, beats PC lot sideways, because we in the 70s, you see, we were only comedians. We weren't social workers, we weren't social commentators, we weren't sending people to Iraq or cancelling pensions. All we were was trying to make people laugh. And it's got so ridiculous now that guys of our ilk, we're not too worried about it now, but you just have to tread very, very carefully now. Mm. And it worries me a bit, because it's a freedom of speech element we're losing. But which is caused by, sadly, the noisy minority, I'm afraid.
Yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, let's not get too heavy about that, because I'll get depressed and want to move to Iraq.
It's City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool, and the voice in the studio you can hear at the moment is my guest this morning, Jim Bowen. Jim, you know, as I say, I could see me talking for hours on this. It's my favourite subject, and I'm sure you won't mind me referring to you as an old-school comedian.
Not at all.
Which, sadly, as I say, is some... Well, I'd love to see it come back. Whether it does, I don't know. But we're charting your career at the moment, so the Comedians was there, and we're up to the question you know I'm going to ask you, that there television show.
Yeah.
Well, how did that come about?
Well, it was a series of accidents again. Right place, right time again. Because I wasn't first choice for it. In fact, I wasn't really in the frame for it at all. And after my first performances, you could see why I should never have been there.
Right.
Because, I mean, we set the industry back 20 years, didn't we, that first series? Jesus Christ, it was awful. It was horrendous. No, it was 3 or 4 other people, for a variety of reasons. Either weren't in, or couldn't answer the phone, or couldn't do it, or something. I got it purely by accident. I was about 4th in line, I think.
Yeah.
And we did the first series, and it was horrendous. And we lost. The first series went out on a Monday night.
Mm. What, just out of interest, Jim, what did it replace? What was on before Bullseye?
It was... I honestly can't... It was either Name That Tune, something like that. It was a... It could have been... That. What's that game where they used to mime things? Do the mime.
Well, that could be anything now, Jim.
Well, good, it could. Yeah, it could be the news now, for God's sake. Was it
Give Us a Clue?
Give Us a Clue, thanks for that. That's the one, and Lionel Blair did it, I think.
Yeah.
I think we followed that in on a prime time on a Monday night, between Crossroads, 6:30 to 7, where if they got the words right, they sacked them. and to spot how many pieces of furniture never moved, you know. But having said that, it pulled 15 million, you know, 11 to 15 million every Monday night.
Yeah.
Do you remember Noel Gordon and Benny?
Oh, God,
I like my Diane.
Yeah.
With his berry on.
No, Noel Gordon was posher than the bloody Queen, wasn't she?
Oh, almost absolutely, yes. But, I mean, it was massive. It was massive. And then at 7:30, Corrie... So whatever you put in there, it was what they called a protected slot. You inherited about 12 million. All you had to do was hold on to them till 7:30. Then Corrie came in and picked it up to 16 million. Remember, we're going back 27 years now. And we went in at, because remember then, they didn't have the remote. So you sat there, you watched Crossroads, and then at 7:00, it could have been, if it wasn't Lionel, the other fillers, the local fillers they had, it could have been a fella painting coffins for half an hour, and you sat next to the wife and you say, well, are you going to get up to change it, or am I?
Yeah.
Because you'd no remote. So they said, oh, sorry, we'll sit here and watch this. So we inherited almost a resident audience, and in the first 6 weeks of Bullseye, we lost 7 million. We lost... 7 million.
Oh, God.
We went down to 7.5 million at 7:15. And then the boss of ITV rang me. He said, we're not doing any more of these. It's costing us thousands and thousands. He said, it's awful. So we're burning the set. So, and that was a phone call I got. And I thought, well, that's me now. I'm out of work. Nobody will want to see me. It was a bit like when Lovely Charlie did the Golden Shot. Do you remember
that? Oh, God, that destroyed his career,
suicide,
didn't it?
He told me once it cost him $4 million.
Really?
Yeah, Charlie said, doesn't know it's cost me $4 million doing that bloody show. Yeah. I should never have done it.
I mean, you couldn't get such a different person than Bob Monkhouse, could you, Charlie Williams?
You don't follow the governor.
No.
I mean, everything Bob did, whoever followed him, if you think about it, apart from maybe family fortunes, whoever followed him never got it right.
No, not
Monkhouse was the best there ever was.
Absolutely.
Oh, he was absolutely the best. Yeah, another one not with us. But anyway, what happened after about show seven, for some unaccountable reason, it started picking up again. And by the time we got to 7:30 at the end of the series, we were back to 12 million. So this John Scofield, the boss of ITV, then rang me again after show 10. He said, well, I don't know what's happening. He said, but they started watching it again. God knows why, he said, because I can't stand it. He said, we worked out why they were watching it, because they were watching it at 7 to half past, watching Corrie and then going to the pub, the lads. Monday night, you see, in the 80s, most nights, the lads were in the pub.
Yeah.
And they said, did you see that bloody bullseye tonight? Have you seen anything like it? It's got to get better. And we knew it didn't, because we put the best show out first.
Right.
So we knew they were all going to be worse. So they were going back next week and said, God almighty, it's going worse. And then it became like a punishment. They had to watch it. It was like torture.
Yeah.
And then they put us on Sunday afternoons, which was a stroke of genius. We followed the Golden Shot in about 5 years after the shot had finished. And, I mean, what a stroke of genius.
But of course, I always remember the story you tell me about the article that Hillary Kingsley did.
Oh, yeah, well, you've got a memory. I remember in the first series, do you want the story about Eric Morecambe?
Yeah, that's what I'm fishing for.
Were you coming? Yeah, I thought you might. We got about show five, six in, and in the Mirror, the news agent from the Village rang me and said, don't get the Mirror today. So obviously, you run straight down and get it, don't you?
Mm.
And there's a half page in the middle of the paper, written by Hillary Kingsley, journalist. And I can still remember, I bet you can remember as well as I can, because I said it to you quite ferociously. She said, what is this geriatric, balding, innumerate doing on our screens? And she vilified me for half a page. And I said to Phyllis, it was 1981, I was still a relative greenhorn. And I said, are we in this business for this? I said, this is awful.
Right.
You know, so a lot of... So I said, the world and his wife have seen me exposed as a bald in here. So I was really down, and Phyllis said, well, I said, I'll go and have a beer in Morecambe tonight. I'll go and have a drink. I went out on my own. It was a Saturday night. Yeah, it was Saturday night. And I went into the Midland Hotel in Morecambe, where I used to go and have a beer, and I walked in the cocktail bar. I thought, that'll be quiet. As I walked in, I went to the bar, facing the bar, away from the room. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The room's at the back of me. And I looked through the mirror, and I heard this voice said, hello, sunshine! I thought, oh, no, for God's sake. Like, I've just been hammered in the press, and I'm the most popular comic in Britain is sitting 10 feet from me, asking me to go and sit with him. Come on, sunshine! And I went and sat down with him, and I never met him, even though his mum and dad lived in Morecambe, he had contacts there. And I sat down, I said, hi, Eric, I said, nice to meet you. He said, I read the Mirror this morning, sunshine. And I said, oh, God. I said, thanks, Eric, for that. You know. And he said to me, let me tell you this, sunshine. He said, the most difficult thing to find in anybody's house is yesterday's newspaper. And I thought, well, what a nice thing to say. And I chatted with him for about an hour, and he talked to me about how when they first went on television, they nearly crucified him out of sight.
Right.
He was wonderful.
Yeah.
Absolutely wonderful. And then the rest, of course, people just took to it for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And it just became, well, it's still around now, for God's sake.
Yeah. How long did it run for? How many episodes?
15 years.
15 years.
And it averaged, Sunday afternoons, it averaged 11 million, peaking at 19 million on Boxing Day in 98.
19 million.
In 88.
Blimey, you can't argue with that.
And it's all luck. I mean, it's not to do with being good or funny or talented. It's just to do with being, again, it's just being in the right place. And it was the right chemistry. We brought Tony Green in, who gave it a bit of validity. It was a working class game, eminently. In fact, we used to call it the Coronation Street of the game shows, because they weren't smooth. I wasn't a Munchausen, that is for sure.
Yeah, it is amazing how times have changed in that. Do you find as though, as you've got older, Jim, obviously with the demise of what I regarded as being comedy that was funny and replaced by something which is completely different, does it make you philosophical at all?
No, I think what you've got to do, some of us can't do this with a lot of good grace. I like to think I can. You've got to accept A, that you're 70. That's the first thing.
Right.
B, you're talking 27 years since we were stars, and anything we get now is a sort of bullet. The reason I'm, if you like, recognised still is because the longevity of the series and the fact that he's back on Challenge, and I've been lucky enough to do a bit of Phoenix Nights and all this business. But you've had a bite of the cherry, you see. And I think you've got. I always regard it now. I look at where I'm sitting now and I look at my surroundings and my domestic situation and I suppose my financial situation, and I just say to that little rubber bull, thank you very much. Mm. And we've had our bite of showbiz, so let the other guys have it now. Whether I can understand this Russell Brand fella, whether I can condone that, the answer is I can't.
Yeah.
But it's not a bitter man saying that, that's just a 70-year-old saying, I can't keep up with you. I don't understand where you're coming from. I'm ashamed to say I don't understand The Office. I can't get my head around it, but that's not because it's bad. It's just because I can't link to it. I can't contact with it. Comedically, I can't see it at all. I can't. And Little Britain, for instance, I can't see anything funny about a man dressed as a woman urinating for Europe in a library, as one of the scenes was. But I'm 70, so it's not my place.
Well, I don't know, Jim. See, you're saying you're 70 there, but a lot of what you've just said there, as me as a 42-year-old, I can relate to.
I think so. I think what it is really, Roy, you've just got to come to terms with the fact that times move on, and when we came in with the comedians, people like Max Miller and Arthur Askin, all those guys, looked at us a little bit like Sharpie upstarts. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
And they gracefully gave way, and I just look back and say, I've had more than my bite of the cherry. So, and I'm quite happy now, and I don't want to hang on with my fingertips, you know. I like to... People say, have you retired? And I'll tell you, no, I haven't retired. What's happened is the phone stopped ringing. That's what happens in this business.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're like Forsyth, who wants to go on like and carry on and on and on, and make people feel, oh, my God, what, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
So it's just knowing when to go. I mean, see, Bruce's phone, obviously, is still ringing. And when the phone rings and you get a chance to do the sort of work Bruce is doing, it's very difficult to refuse it. It's not necessarily the wrong thing to refuse it, but sometimes it's nice to know when to go. And I'm saying that as tactfully as I can. And again, it's all so subjective. It's all a matter of opinion. I think Philip Schofield now is probably the ultimate presenter we've got at the minute, with Phil and Fern in the morning, the way he's doing the ice thing, and you look at other people presenting other primetime shows, and you think, hang on.
He's not trying to be anything. He's not trying to be clever at anything. He's just a very good presenter, isn't he?
And he's just an extremely nice guy.
Yeah.
You know, he really is. And him and Fern, I mean, are just, in the morning, I think they're the best by a mile.
Yeah, I agree with you.
By a country mile, I really do.
Yeah. Anyway, well, Jim, it's been lovely speaking to you. Will you be booking Vince Miller for your funeral yourself?
Well, I think mine's going to be a fairly quiet one.
Right, okay then.
I think,
you better cross Frank Carson off the invite list.
No. What did Spike Milligan say? He says, I'm not so much frightened of death. He said, but I just don't want to be there when it happens.
Jim Bowen on City Talk. Thanks very much for your time, Jim.
God bless you, Roy.
City Talk 105.9, the best of Roy Basnett.
Jim Bowen there, a legend in the comedy world. You're listening to the best of the Roy Basnett Show on City Talk 105.9. Next, I'm going to introduce you to a regular contributor on the show. His name is Phil Bimpson. He's a Scouser, born and bred, and every week I send him onto the streets of Liverpool to meet up with ordinary people with real stories to tell. And this is what happened this week.
City Talk 105.9, the streets of Phil Bimpson.
Just walking around the streets interviewing people, you know, local characters and things.
Yeah.
And we noticed you were down here a little bit earlier selling the big issue, yeah?
Yeah.
And how come you ended up in this situation?
Because I'm from Dublin, I am. And I came over here 3.5 years ago. Okay. My rent should be property pill. Still haven't got a place to live yet.
Oh, my God. So what's your name so we might get you shot up the list?
My name is Tom Cummins.
Tom Cummins. Yeah. And you've been here for 3 years now?
Yeah, 3.5 years, yeah. So, came in 2005. So I did April 24th.
So where did it all go wrong?
When I came here, to be honest with you.
Why did you leave Dublin?
Problems back home, you know.
Yeah,
drug deals and things like that, you know. Just packed up and come over, thought it'd be better over here. Boy, God, was I wrong.
Yeah.
It's a lovely city, don't get me wrong. The people are friendly and nice, but on every street corner, there's drugs everywhere, mate.
Yeah. It's so do you horrible. Still have a habit, or...?
Yeah, I have a habit, yeah. Don't use needles or that. Smoke it, you know. Yeah. Things like that, yeah.
So what is it that you smoke, is it?
Heroin.
Crack. Okay. So do you have to do this every day?
Every day, yeah.
So where are you staying? Where are you living?
I live with friends, very good friends. Okay. This couple is married and that. Okay. They have a 10-month-old baby and all. Do you know what I mean?
And it's down the city centre?
No, that's out of the city centre, yeah.
Okay.
If it wasn't for them, like, I'd be lost, you know what I mean? Yeah. I'd be still on the streets to this day.
Yeah.
They wash me clothes, cook me meals, they do everything for me.
That's probably part of the Scouse philosophy, you know, we do tend to look out. Yeah, but once you're in Liverpool, you soon become a Scouser.
That's true, yeah. And this is the heart of Dublin.
Well, that's right, it's the capital of Ireland, you know.
It's the capital of the culture as well now. These are getting bigger.
That's right. So now that we are the capital of culture, have you had any problems with, like, people wanting to move you on or...?
No, the only problems you get is the busiest, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the police.
Like, yeah, like, when I deal with a big issue, like, the police, like, they stop you, they're checking your badge, checking your mags, like, it'd be a different story if we were in robbing shops and that. Well, then I'd understand that.
Yeah,
do you know that way? But, like, we're not. Yeah. We're just out there trying to thing.
In a little thrust. Yeah. So how long have you been selling the big issue?
A year.
How did you get into that?
A friend told me about it. I was into shoplifting first, but then I stopped. Because I heard of the big issue, you know, and it was a big thing for me, the big issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, did you end up getting arrested? And
yeah, I did for shoplifting, yeah, and things like that.
So obviously, if you're homeless, they can't really fine you. Did you do any prison?
No, I didn't know prison. No, okay. No. Because I only came from Dublin, it was a whole new record for me.
Right.
Didn't bring me previous back up from back home because they can't do that. Okay. If it was from Northern Ireland, well, then it's a different story, you know that way.
So, how's life treating you now?
Good. It can be better, but you know what I mean? You have to live the way you can, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you don't seem like a young man. How old are you?
I'm only 32.
32?
Yeah.
Man, I remember when I was 32.
Yeah. Were you doing this?
I was doing a little bit of DJing and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and we've come out on the streets just to meet the real people of Merseyside.
Yeah,
you know, all walks of life.
Yeah.
So obviously you start at the bottom because I did.
Yeah.
And you know, that's why we're down here in Bull Street tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But what's your future? You on a
get my own place and then hopefully get a job and take it from there. Then, you know what I mean?
So are you on any medications to help you?
Don't take it. Don't believe in it. If I'm on one drug, I'll stay on one drug. If I go on to another drug, I'll give up another drug. No point in having four different habits,
is there? I understand that. But I believe they have these methadone courses.
Yeah, I don't believe in them.
What happens there?
I don't believe in methadone. Don't take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're just living partially on your wits?
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to wish you every success, and maybe in a few months' time, if we're walking down Bold Street,
you can call me house for dinner.
Or even call to your house for dinner.
Yeah, you can't. You know, and on a radio show.
That's right, we'll talk about this.
Please God.
Because there may be the bad old days today, but there will be the good old days.
That's true.
And hopefully I'll see you again. I wish you every success. It's Phil Bimson.
The Streets of Phil Bimson, exclusively on City Talk 105.9.
But we're actually coming down interviewing people with very unusual pets.
Yeah?
On the streets of Liverpool.
Unusual pets with stitches. Eyelashes.
Well, Hannibal Lecter here is quite unusual, like.
So what is this dog?
He's a Sharpei.
And how old is he?
He's nine weeks. His name's Marley.
And why has it got stitches in its eyes?
Because his wrinkles force his eyelids to turn inside and scratch his eyes. So we have to have them stitched back.
Oh, my God. So how much is this dog worth?
A lot of money. £750.
So, have you had this type of dog before?
No, mate, I haven't. And I tell you what, I didn't expect him to be as much hard work.
Yeah.
5 o'clock starts every morning, 1 o'clock finish in the morning. It's hard work, mate, but worth every penny, like, do you know what I mean?
It's
one of the boys, isn't he? It's one of the boys. That's it, mate.
That's right.
He loves the girls, like. He loves the girls. Yeah. Say something to him. Yeah, mate. Loves it, like.
Absolutely lovely.
So, have you ever had any other unusual pets?
I've had snakes, rats, terrapins. I've had all kinds, mate, yeah.
So are you like the zoologist amongst your friends?
I love animals, mate, yeah. I love animals.
Have you got any other strange animals at the moment?
It's just me bird, mate. It's just my girlfriend, mate. That's about it, mate.
Hey, thanks for that. See you
soon. Oh, hey, mate. Nice to meet you, mate. All the best. Take it easy, guys. The Streets of Phil Bimpson, exclusively
on City Talk 105.9. Phil Bimpson there, meeting the real people on the streets of Liverpool. This is the best of the Roy Basnett Show on City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. Each week on my show, I'm joined by Nick and Eva Speakman, life coaches to the stars. They have changed so many people's lives, and this is the advice they dispensed when this week I went to visit them in their rural mansion somewhere in England.
Roy Basnett.
At home with the Speakmans.
Anna Speakmans are here. Good morning, Speakmans.
Good morning, Roy.
Good morning, Liverpool.
We're back. We're here.
How am I start doing that? Good morning, Liverpool. Yes. I like it.
Anyway. Isn't Liverpool a great place to be?
It is.
It really is. I love Liverpool.
It is when you're 450 foot up in the air and you can see it all around, especially with all these beautiful lights that you see in the building of a night time.
It is. It's really nice. Very spectacular.
Lovely, fantastic.
Breathtaking. Yeah. Breathtaking.
Yeah. And are we going to run, when we leave today, are we going to run down the stairs, Eva?
Yeah, I'm going to it'll take us. They have a good amount of training.
There is a staircase down the St. John's Tower here, the City Talk Tower, but apparently it takes 20 minutes to go down it, and it's not the nicest of routes. It's not like one of these, you know, when you see in an old building like a spiral staircase and you can see down the bottom. It ain't like that because you can't see the bottom. It just goes whop, 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 whop. But if you want to do it, fine, saves us on the electricity for the lift.
Let's do that.
I think we shall do that.
If you do that, we're reducing our carbon footprint then.
There
really,
you go. Well, then it's
and let's
all
see if we can do it under 20 minutes.
Yeah, I'm sure we can. I'm sure we can.
Okay. Every day is a challenge for
isn't
you,
isn't it?
One
thing after another.
This is the only way to be.
Amazing. So what's our tip for today then?
Well, I think this is your favourite subject, isn't it, really?
My favourite subject. I've got lots
one of many.
Subjects.
One of many.
Yeah,
many.
It's not stamp collective.
Just
think
it's
about
stamp collective.
It's not, no.
Oh,
it's the...
Good
the whole word depression, because we just don't believe in the word.
Doesn't exist.
Delete it out of your vocabulary.
And what's so sad is that we love doctors, because obviously doctors, to anyone to take that profession, have got to really, really care about people. You know, they do a lot of studying. They wouldn't even consider doing that if they didn't care.
No.
But if you go to the doctor, what is your expectation?
Come on, Roy.
Expectation. He's going to give you some bad news. Maybe. or he's going to give you a prescription.
That's right. Oh, yay.
Yeah, I got there eventually. Yes, yes.
So you go and see the doctor because you're saying something's wrong. Your expectation is to come out there with a prescription.
Yeah.
And the doctor...
And in fairness, sorry to interrupt, but the doctor can only work with the tools that he's got available. And those tools are a stethoscope, a syringe... And a prescription book.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I say, love doctors, but obviously, you know, and I've got to be honest, having said that, they are, I was absolutely
delighted. I think times are changing a little bit.
Times are changing. I was delighted to go to our doctors a few weeks ago with our son who's got eczema. And my doctor said to me, have you tried homeopathic treatment? And had it not been for the fact that I was married, I could have given him the biggest kiss there and then and given him the biggest, fattest hug. But I didn't want to give him the come on. Oh, and I just thought, geez. That is amazing. I was so thrilled that for the first time ever...
No pills, just telling you to do that.
Yeah, and also we worked with a lady in recent times who came to see us because she was having severe pains in her knees because she was clinically obese. And obviously the weight was putting a strain on her knees.
Yeah, yeah.
And she actually went to the doctor for painkillers. Mm. And the doctor said to her, I'm not giving you painkillers. Lose weight, you're fat.
Really?
Yeah.
That's to the point, isn't it?
It is.
That's exactly what that lady needed. Because instead of pussyfooting around and there in her and pumping her full of chemicals, which will absolutely do, all it'll do is just mask the damage problem, and the problem.
Papered over the cracks,
And instead, he was hard with her, and she was insulted. But my word, that insult was exactly what she needed.
Saved
she
a life.
Came to see us
saved
and said,
a life, in my opinion.
I need you to help me. I want to lose weight. I've got a chocolate addiction. Mm. And she went from eating nearly... poor woman had a newsagent shop. Mm. So the chocolate was there on a stand. But she went from eating almost 20 bars of chocolate per day to absolutely none. And to this day, she just is not interested in chocolate.
Oh, I've had a Kit Kat today. That's not going to put me in the high risk category.
No, I don't think so. I mean, everything in moderation, of course. You know that we don't say that you shouldn't have anything. You know, a little bit of everything is great. Yeah. But I mean, in a very short space of time, she's lost masses of weight. Her knees feel fantastic. She feels fantastic. She looks fantastic, and her whole life is starting again.
And
for
I suppose the good thing about that is that she's achieved a healthier state by herself, as opposed to being assisted by, you know, some
drugs.
What sort of saddens me, though, you know, thinking about what happened with her, is that some people would go to the doctor, and if the doctor was to say that, they'd go absolutely mental. They'd probably complain, they'd probably write to the medical council. When in actual fact, that doctor basically saved her life. Sometimes I think that when somebody does say something that's a bit harsh towards you, and we all know what our problems are.
The truth can hurt, can't it?
It can hurt. But, you know, in that circumstance, she took it exactly as, yes, she was offended, but she sort of said, well, I can't argue with him, he's absolutely spot on. So, yeah, no, so she's doing great.
But it's so better being honest like that. And it's like, you know, how many times do people have situations in their life where maybe the partner was having an affair or something like that, and as soon as it comes out in the open, all the friends say, oh, did you not know? You know, I could have told you this, I could have told you that. Mm-hmm. It happens all the time.
But, but worse than that is when you've got lipstick on your teeth and nobody tells you. But it's true.
What?
When you've got lipstick on your teeth.
What about that when
you
go to the toilet and they put the dress and the knickers?
Yeah, that's another one as well.
Oh.
People just don't say anything.
Well, maybe we could do another feature here because you spot the signs, don't you? I suppose it'd be even more disconcerting if you had lipstick on your teeth and you hadn't actually been with a woman.
Yeah.
From a bloke point of view, of course.
Of course. Right. But anyway, we digress, as we often do.
We do. But going back to doctors, who, as you know, I keep stressing, we do care about here. But if you go to the doctor and you are feeling a bit down and you discuss with that with your doctor, the likelihood is that you might get prescribed antidepressants.
I'd say in more cases than
and
not.
We don't like those, Roy, because at the end of the day, they are just suppressing your feelings. So although you will not feel as down as you did before you went to the doctors, you won't be able to feel as happy either.
I would imagine as well that I mean, because the body, when you get an illness, okay, you can take kind of aspirins and stuff like that in order to get over it, and you might even get you better quicker. But ultimately, it's your body that is naturally rectifying itself and combating
Correct.
The problem. Mm. And I would imagine this is certainly true with all things. For example, like obesity and that. And if you assist your body in its natural way of rectifying itself, then it will do it.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah, definitely. And really, I mean, what we've got to appreciate is that, you know, our state of mind, our brain is the only thing that we alone are completely in control of. Nobody else can control your brain, just as you can't control somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, you can't make somebody do anything, but you can make yourself do something. And obviously, if you're going to your doctor, and, you know, any issue, any addiction, any problem, the first step is admitting that you've got that issue. And if you're able to go to your doctor and say, I'm feeling a bit down, then step one, you're nearly there. You've identified that there's an issue. But if your state of mind is down, then all you need to do is change that state of mind. You know, ask yourself, at what times in my life have I been happy? What kind of things have I done in my life? What kind of hobbies? What have I enjoyed to take you into a happier place? You know, I mean, we actually worked with a chap only a few days ago who said that he was depressed. And quite frankly, it was no wonder. You know, he's a 28-year-old chap, not working, was spending his whole day in bed, getting up, watching a bit of telly, going to bed, spending his whole day in bed. Well, how can anybody feel fulfilled or happy or like they've made a difference in life if that's what they're doing? Mm. So obviously, you know, change what you're doing, do something that you enjoy, and automatically you will feel better. And I'm not taking away from the fact that obviously there are people out there who might go through some quite turbulent times in their lives and they do feel down. Of course that happens, and we're really sympathetic to that. But, you know, but again, you know, you do become what you think about, so think about something different.
The two things I pick up on that is in the same way as an alcoholic would go to some kind of group and they'd say, admit that you've got a problem and you're halfway there, it's probably got to be the same with a lot of things, certainly with food and obesity, because people will not accept the fact that they are eating too much. And there's an element of denial with it, because I've been speaking to people, not necessarily obese, but they've put a bit about overweight, and they say, I can't understand why this. I only have a small meal and this and what have you, but they exclude the fact that, oh, I have a bag of crisps there, I might have a bar of chocolate there, and this and that, and I don't necessarily exercise. And they only kind of pick up on the bits that they want. Because it's as if they think, well, it's a bag of crisps, that's not as though it's going to affect me, is it? But yeah, obviously it is. And it's about identifying the fact that you do have a problem, you're halfway there.
Correct.
One of the things that if we work with someone who's got a weight problem, we always ask them that prior to coming to see us that they fill out a food diary for the preceding week. And everything that they put in their mouth for a full week, they need to put it down. And it's amazing that food diary alone, how that changes people, because they don't realise what they're eating.
Because, it's a good point. It just doesn't register. But if you put it on paper, then, you can see where you're going wrong.
One of the biggest things that we find where people don't seem to add it into what they've consumed in a day is when they're cooking a meal and they're picking, or they cook a meal for the kids, and then they pick up some chips that have been left over off the kids' plate, and then they cook a meal with the husband or wife.
I do that,
So, and that all counts. It all gets taken into consideration. And another thing for weight gain is not eating regularly. So eat your three meals a day plus two lots of snacks, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. It keeps your metabolism going. It stops you from feeling hungry, so it stops you binging on stuff you shouldn't be eating. And be honest with yourself and don't allow yourself anything other than your three meals and your two snacks. No snacking in between.
And make sure you have your breakfast, because breakfast is very important.
Breakfast is enormously important. Do you know why they say why they call it breakfast?
I think we did this the other week, but just remind me.
Do you know, I waffle on so much. I know. Remember what
does Roy listen? That's what I'm wondering.
Demonstrated the fact that I do.
He is demonstrating that he does.
But we might have new listeners who do not know, so I think you should enlighten them.
Well, breakfast is actually, obviously, from the sound of it, is breaking a fast. So, and if you don't eat, obviously your body's not eating all through the night, there's been no fuel going in there. So it's really important to feed your body in the morning, but it really does give your metabolism a real good kickstart. So a lot of people say, well, I don't want to eat breakfast because I don't want to, if I don't eat breakfast and just have my lunch, then it means one less meal. So I'm not going to be eating as many calories. But the fact is that if you don't eat breakfast, the calories you do consume at lunchtime will be held onto your body, because our bodies are a fantastic machine. And what they worry about is a state of famine. And you are putting your body through a state of famine. So when you do feed it, because it's all about self-preservation, it holds on to your food, it converts it to body fat, and it will hold on to it more. So you do get a lot of people that say, well, do you know, I only eat one meal. I only start eating from tea time onwards. And yet, I can't lose any weight. Absolutely no wonder. If you don't eat regularly, your body's going to hold on to it because it's scared. It's there to protect you.
But getting back to the principle of this particular thing. I was listening to that because I agree, and I'm sure a lot of people will certainly relate to it. But the actual principle of what we're getting at with our tip for the day, if you like, is...
Try and avoid those antidepressants, and if you are feeling a bit down, and look, as Eva said before, look at the good things in your life, because we've got total control of our emotions. Total control. As Eva said, it's the only thing that we have got total control over. So if you want to feel happy or sad, effectively it's a choice. And if you're feeling sad, and I'm using that word, in fact I'm going to use that word from now on instead of the word depressed, so people are aware of that. If you're feeling sad, then it's because you're focusing on things that make you sad. And it could well be that someone's had a bereavement, or something has gone really badly wrong for them, but they keep focusing on that and thinking about it again and again and again, and they're feeling sad. So what you've got to do is just change your focus and think about good things in your life, because time is a big healer.
And you do become what you think about, don't you?
You do become what you think about, and time is a big healer. And, everyone listening will have had situations in their life where they thought, I'll never get over this. This is just horrendous. I'll never get through it. But you always do. You always get through it. And I would say, well, why wait? Why wait for the 3 month, 6 month, 12 month, 3 years, or however long it's going to take to get over it? Make a decision and get over it now, and start thinking about your future life and thinking about good things.
That sounds pretty good.
There you go.
Thank you very much, Speakmans.
It's a pleasure.
A pleasure.
And that's this week's podcast from the Roy Basnett Show on City Talk 105.9. Don't forget, you can join me live on the radio each weekday morning between 2 and 6am on City Talk across the North West and North Wales on 105.9 FM or DAB Digital Radio. And of course, you can listen live online at citytalk.fm. That's it for now. I'll catch you next week.
City Talk 105.9, the best of Roy Basnett.